Case number 18-5135, Children's Hospital Association of Texas et al. Versus Alex Michael Azar II, in his official capacity, Secretary, Department of Health and Human Services, and all appellants. Ms. Morrissey, for the appellants. Mr. Sevens, for the appellate.
May it please the court, Tara Morrissey for the government. In the final rule, CMS reasonably concluded that compensated costs are not uncompensated costs. Each state has a limited pool of federal DSH funds, and a hospital gets a share of those funds only if it has uncompensated costs. The final rule tries to direct these funds to the hospitals that need them the most, and it does this by recognizing that payments by private insurance and Medicare are compensation. When plaintiffs are fully compensated by these sources, they have incurred no costs, and they don't need supplemental payments to fill a shortfall.
Don't you need to look at the whole statute and not just the catch line? I mean, haven't we said lots of times that the catch line itself, uncompensated costs, does not really state the substantive law?
Of course, Judge Santel.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, and the statute supports the final rule. It's a reasonable interpretation of the statute, and there are
the
three textual.
The cost incurred as determined by the Secretary, and net of payments under this chapter. Now, the payments you're talking about netting out here are not payments under this chapter, right?
Correct.
And Congress didn't say net of all payments, it said net of payments under this chapter, right?
I think Your Honor is suggesting what the district court relied on, which is Express Yo
Unius. I think I probably am.
Yes, and the fact that Congress specified one payment category that pertains to Medicaid patients does not foreclose the Secretary from considering other payments.
Is it a reasonable interpretation to say that Congress went to the trouble of saying net of these payments? And still, you can net out other payments that are not mentioned by Congress? Is
Absolutely, in this context. If you, in the full parenthetical, Your Honor.
It includes you, excludes you, is called a weak canon, but it is a canon, and it makes a world of sense, doesn't it?
It's a canon.
If Congress went to the trouble of including something, then that means they didn't mean to include something else over here.
This court has said it's a weak canon in the administrative context, but particularly so when paired with an express delegation of authority. And if you look to the immediately preceding clause in that parenthetical, it says that costs incurred are both, as determined by the Secretary, and net of payments under this subchapter.
So, no, it does not say both and. It says as determined by the Secretary, mm-hmm. and then it has the parenthetical. Now,
yes.
I'm not at all certain that as determined by the Secretary really adds a whole lot to the statute. If you leave out that expression, then the question would come up, well, who gets to determine it? Do they just take the cost as determined by the submitter or according to GAAP principles? Or are they to be determined by the Secretary? Well, they say determined by the Secretary, but that doesn't mean the Secretary can go outside the authority otherwise granted in the statute, does it?
Judge Sattel, costs incurred reflects these offsetting payments, these compensation from Medicaid. So we know costs incurred is not a gross cost amount. And the district court even said that costs incurred alone may permit the deduction of may permit the secretary to conclude that it had discretion to enact this, promulgate this rule. If you're relying then on just this reference to Medicaid payments, the Sixth Circuit correctly concluded that the fact that certain payments must be netted out doesn't mean that other payments cannot be. Congress was imposing a limitation on the secretary's otherwise broad authority to determine the meaning of costs incurred.
Sixth Circuit is not binding upon us.
Of course not, no.
And they were a 2-1 vote, and Judge Etheridge wrote a pretty, eloquent opinion, didn't he, in dissent?
We, of course, disagree with Judge Kaplan.
And we might disagree with him, or we might disagree with the other two. Mm-hmm. In any event, the fact that the Sixth Circuit did it doesn't mean we have to.
So the line you quote from the Sixth Circuit is exactly what Judge Santel is trying to get you to explain to us.
Yes.
Congress is concerned about federal money, what's going to happen to it, et cetera. So what are the limits on the secretary's discretion, on your view?
It has to be reasonable and needs to comport with the structure of the statute as a whole.
The hospital has bought private insurance, all right? So the hospital buys something else. It's a good investment. It makes a profit on its investment. Can the secretary deduct that?
This would need to relate to costs incurred of furnishing hospital services. If there's a payment.
Somebody leaves a bequest to the hospital, mm-hmm. all right, says, I love the work you're doing. I want to see more uninsured and low-income people receiving the quality services you've been provided. So here's $1 billion. Can the secretary deduct that?
That typically, I don't think we see those sorts of gifts being given for.
Volume,
I'm sorry? Specifically being earmarked for inpatient and outpatient hospital services to these patients.
You would think that there are types of services that are eligible, that's a dangerous word, I understand, eligible to be determined as reimbursable costs. Band-aids are, laser equipment isn't. The secretary makes those decisions, mm-hmm. and that's within the secretary's discretion. But then, Judge Santel was exploring with you, Congress has said you must deduct this. And you say, but it doesn't mean we can't deduct anything else we want to.
Payments that are for inpatient and outpatient hospital services provided to Medicaid patients directly compensate hospitals for their gross costs of treating those patients.
I understand you keep coming back to that, but the bequest is just like insurance. I mean, the hospital gets money, coverage. I'm just trying to understand what is the limit of the secretary's authority. So your view is that Congress would have had to say, you may deduct this and only this.
That would certainly certainly foreclose
right.
the secretary.
This court, as you know, has mm-hmm. lots of opinions that say an agency can't assume it has sort of unbridled delegation.
Correct. And the agency here is relying on the express delegation of authority from Congress to determine costs incurred, a term that this court and others have explained in other contexts can reflect reimbursements or compensation from sources, and this court said that in Dana-Farber. Different case, but Medicare context, the statute was costs actually incurred.
Right.
That shows that costs incurred.
Do you think Congress was unaware of that? If we assume Congress is aware of that body of case law, then mm-hmm. shouldn't we expect Congress to say net of those payments if Congress meant for them to be netted up?
No, Your Honor, and Congress could have done that, but
since they did this, wouldn't it have been reasonable for them to have done that if they wanted other payments netted out as well?
It could have done that. The fact that it did not does not unambiguously foreclose the Secretary. And I'd like to make four points why the expressio unius can and should not apply here. In addition to the express delegation of authority, this is one category of Medicaid payment, of payments for Medicaid patients. It's the most natural source of payment for Medicaid patients. And Congress wanted to make sure that those payments were, at a minimum, deducted in calculating a Medicaid shortfall.
At a minimum?
At a minimum. And number
where
two,
did Congress say
the
that?
Well,
Congress didn't say that. You're saying that, but Congress didn't say that.
Congress also titled the calculation Uncompensated Costs, and it's not just in the heading. It's also in paragraph J2. Congress later required states to certify that only the uncompensated care costs would be included in this calculation. It also, the second sentence of paragraph, the provision that we've been looking at, speaks about state and local payments for indigent patients and says that those shall not be treated as a source of third-party payment, showing that Congress presumed that the Secretary may be accounting for other types of third-party payments. And in addition, the canon is, the purpose of the DSH payment program would be completely undermined by applying the expressio unius canon in this context. And courts have recognized that you should not apply the canon in that situation. If I could give an example of two hypothetical hospitals to help illustrate the consequences of the district court's approach. Hypothetical Hospital A treats only privately insured Medicaid patients, spends $1 million on treating them, and is reimbursed $1 million. So it has been fully compensated and suffered no shortfall. Meanwhile, Hospital B treats Medicaid-only patients, and it is reimbursed at a lower rate. So it gets only $600,000 for those same expenses. Now, Hospital B, unlike Hospital A, has suffered a shortfall, and you would think that it would be the hospital that would be eligible for more supplemental payments. But the district court held that Congress unambiguously required the opposite result. That means Hospital A is entitled to more DSH funding and can effectively be paid twice, even though Hospital B is the one that suffered a shortfall. The final rule is not aiming to get more money back for the federal government. It's about making sure that these limited funds go to the right hospitals.
Let me ask you, the Secretary used to have a different view, correct?
No, Your Honor. Courts have held that the Secretary's view
has evolved.
The Secretary's consistently
had
the view.
Always deducted private insurance.
Has always had the view that these should be deducted. Some courts have held.
Has always deducted private insurance.
Has always required, has always viewed the statute as requiring that, yes. And
has the Secretary always deducted private insurance?
The Secretary is not doing the deducting, it's the states, but it's, the Secretary has required these payments to be deducted. What you might be referring to is in the final rule.
You can play words games with me, but I'd like my question answered.
Okay. To the extent the Secretary is doing any deducting, then yes, it has always deducted these payments.
It has always required states
to
include private insurance as a deduction?
Yes. That was set forth in the preamble to the 2008 rule. Now, and later in the 2010 in the FAQs, and courts held that that policy needed to be promulgated through notice and comment.
Yes.
And that's what the Secretary did here. But that doesn't mean the Secretary's, the litigation was because the Secretary had that view and hospitals challenged it. So the Secretary has now promulgated that final rule.
So that's that FAQ 33, right? Or 34?
Yes.
All right, when was that?
2010, Your Honor.
All right. What happened before that?
Before that,
hospitals were not deducting this. Is that correct? Because the states weren't requiring it.
We don't know exactly what was happening. 2014 was the first year when audits were submitted for the 2011 services state plan year that that actually had financial consequences for the hospitals. So that's when we started seeing the litigation. And you can see in the comments to the 2008 rule, commenters thought, some said that Medicaid-eligible patients that had additional insurance, like Medicare, just shouldn't be counted at all in the calculation. And they said, if there's been no payment by Medicaid, then you should just exclude that patient completely.
So do you agree that these hospitals, the case they bring, we are not dealing with some of the concerns that the secretary previously had about how this money was being doled out by the states. Is that right?
No, you might be referring to the legislative history where Congress identified a couple of concerns.
That's right.
Yeah, and so those particular concerns are not, as far as I know, present here.
Right.
But Congress enacted a much broader.
So the court has been given a lot of data, financial data, about the bottom line of these hospitals. Is that all incorrect?
It's based on the wrong numbers.
So it's based on inflated numbers?
The inflated costs, these plaintiffs have referred to actual costs,
right,
and they've recognized that those are different from the costs that are considered in this calculation.
That are Medicare eligible?
Costs of providing inpatient and outpatient hospital services.
Yeah.
That's what the calculation considers for all hospitals across the board.
So that's an inflated cost?
So if
I just need to understand what the flaw is in all this fiscal data that the court has been given from the secretary's point of view.
If you're going to go beyond those costs that are considered in the statute, such as considering ancillary services, research, things that aren't inpatient and outpatient hospital services, then you can inflate the actual costs and it might look like there's been a shortfall. If you look at the actual costs and you look at them for the right patients, some of the plaintiffs also, I believe, have tried to separate out the costs and give a number for the costs of treating Medicaid-only patients and emphasize that shortfall, and then treat the costs of treating Medicaid-eligible patients that have additional insurance as some kind of separate cost. But the statute considers all of this in the aggregate, and an overpayment for one type of patient, for a Medicaid patient who has insurance, and a Medicaid-only patient or an uninsured patient, at the end of the day, Congress required a total number, uncompensated costs, for all of those patients. So a surplus from one category of patients is used to compensate for maybe a deficit with respect to treating another set of patients.
So if I'm a hospital that now spends money on private insurance, why should I continue to do so? Because if I don't have that insurance, won't I get a higher federal reimbursement?
Well, I'm sorry, if you're a hospital that is using private
people, one of the institutions currently before us,
and
now,
they
buy private insurance, and the state is requiring them, the secretary is requiring the state to be sure that they deduct that private insurance.
I mean, the patients are coming to the hospital. It's the patients.
You understand my question, don't you? I'm a hospital. I'm trying to figure out my bottom dollar. If I don't pay for insurance.
Sorry, Your Honor. The hospital is not actually paying for the insurance.
Well,
what you're dealing with
patient.
Is the patient's insurance
yeah.
that the patient has, not what the hospital
right.
has.
So
right.
So what do they do with that insurance? Is there any way they can get a higher federal Medicaid reimbursement? That's what I'm trying to understand. Some of the patients are paying. Some of the patients have insurance. Other patients don't. Other patients still are eligible because of the nature of the condition they have.
If a patient has private insurance only, they're not considered in this calculation
right.
because they're not Medicaid eligible.
Right.
If they are Medicaid eligible,
right.
then any compensation received, it might be private insurance, it might be Medicaid, might be Medicare, is counted as compensation in this calculation of uncompensated costs. And so if a hospital is receiving third-party private insurance payments that are going to exceed its relevant costs here, then those need to be accounted for. And the final rule recognizes that in that situation, if a hospital has a net gain from treating a patient, then that's compensation, significant compensation. And the hospital doesn't have a need for supplemental payments to fill any type of gap.
Well, what I'm thinking of is some real experience where hospitals don't want to treat low-income, uninsured people. All right? And what I'm trying to understand in those circumstances, are those hospitals therefore, because they're not getting this insurance, getting a higher federal Medicaid reimbursement? I know it's the details make the difference, but just as a general theoretical matter.
I don't know, Your Honor. I believe there may be some other restrictions on hospitals refusing to treat certain patients.
Well, it happens all the time.
The amicus points to, and maybe you're thinking of, they say that hospitals might have not be incentivized to help patients enroll in private insurance if they are...
Hospitals refuse to treat uninsured people, period. They will deny it, but the facts are there. So I'm just trying to understand, does that put them in a better position? Otherwise, why are they doing it? Not sure.
I don't think the hospital at the outset is, assuming it could do that, I don't think at the outset it's going to know whether the patient has, you know, Medicaid only or private insurance, and is going to be making calculations at that level of detail. I mean,
when you come in the front door, you have to tell them, do you have insurance? No. Sorry. We don't have any room for you.
I mean, all hospitals are getting, Medicaid is generally paying at a lower rate for Medicaid patients. So in theory, all hospitals could have an incentive, as you've described. But hospitals are treating Medicaid patients, and Congress, in addition to regular Medicaid payments, set up this program so that hospitals could get a supplemental payment to help meet the costs, because it did recognize that hospitals that treat a disproportionate share of Medicaid and uninsured patients do tend to suffer a shortfall. And it wanted to help hospitals meet that gap, to fill that shortfall.
So you understand my question, don't you, that if I'm a hospital and I decide I'm going to treat more uninsured people, do I get a higher Medicaid reimbursement?
If you decide that you're not going to treat uninsured?
That I do not want to receive insurance, that I am going to...
You're going to only treat uninsured people?
Right.
I mean, the hospital would have to weigh... I can't say how much the hospital gets from uninsured patients.
I don't understand how the system works, because in various communities around the country, we have this problem, all right, where hospitals refuse to serve uninsured people. And I'm assuming, but I just thought as we were talking, whether I'm right about this, that there's no incentive there from your federal reimbursement. You may not know. All right.
And, yeah, I guess I'm sorry.
No, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I just thought about it.
I mean, I do know that supplemental payments will help fill whatever gap there is. So if the hospital, it's not guaranteed, but the federal government makes this finite pool of funds available to each state to share among hospitals in the state to help them meet whatever their uncompensated costs are. And this final rule is simply trying to ensure that the funds are distributed to the hospitals that actually have uncompensated costs, and that accounts for compensation by private insurance and Medicare that are real and significant compensation. There really are hospitals that, under the final rule, have uncompensated costs and would be eligible to receive more funds under the final rule.
Can I ask you a question about G1A, which is what we're talking about? I thought the first sentence was clear in that the parenthetical, as determined by the Secretary, is one condition in determining costs incurred. Mm-hmm. The second is that it must be net of two types of payments, Medicaid and whatever the indigent patient can pay himself. Now, would you agree that the secretary, in his discretion, could not go counter to the lopping off the Medicaid and indigent payment.
Yes, of
indigent
course.
Mm-hmm. Patient payments.
Yes.
Okay. And I thought, actually, I thought what the second condition was, that is the net of those two types of payments sets a floor and does not bind the secretary from lopping off other payments. But that's then you get to that second sentence,
mm-hmm.
and that is got to be one of the most garbled sentences because it begins with a source of third-party coverage and switches to source of third-party payment. And mm-hmm. But I guess my question is this. The whole intent was to stop the double dipping, for lack of a better phrase.
Yes.
This second sentence, mm-hmm. it seems to me, does allow a certain amount of double dipping. If I'm reading it correctly, that is that when a hospital says, okay, for my costs incurred, I cannot include Medicaid, I cannot include what the indigent pays himself. Under the rule, I cannot include Medicare or private third-party insurance. But I can, I don't have to lop off what a state or local government has paid. And why is that double dipping allowed? Or am I reading
right,
that
no,
second?
That's a good question, Judge Henderson. That's correct. And there, Congress, I think, made an exception. And that was to avoid disincentivizing state and local governments from making these sorts of payments, which really look a lot like a DSH payment. Right. And there is a state component to the DSH payment. So to not disincentivize state and local governments from making those sorts of payments. And it's not going to count against the hospital if the state has decided to make those payments.
All right. And then how does that the states administer the Medicaid.
Correct.
So
mm-hmm.
let's take a state that also makes payments for indigent care separate and apart from Medicaid. Is that what this second sentence is directed at?
Yes, that's my.
And that's just from state taxes.
I'm sorry? State taxes? I don't know if it would be a tax or, yeah, what. It could some sort of payment that the state's making to
hospitals.
Do you
know whether a state government itself or a local government itself has some sort of insurance that provides, it must be tax-based.
Yes.
I don't know.
Okay, all right. Would you also agree with me then that in his discretion the secretary could not decide, no, we're going to count state and local government payments when I'm determining the cost incurred?
Yes, that's a limitation on the secretary's authority and shows that Congress thought that the secretary would deduct other types of third-party payments. So that's why it needed to specify that those particular state and local payments should not be deducted.
Well, it seems to make sense to me if the whole thing was to make sure they make hospitals whole as much as possible, but not allow the double dipping.
And that's exactly what the final rule is trying to do, Your Honor.
Any more questions? All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Simmons?
Good morning, and thank you, Your Honors. I'm David Salmons on behalf of the Children's Hospitals. Congress has provided a clear formula in subsection G1A built around three distinct and unambiguous statutory concepts. Costs, which has the ordinary meaning of outlays or liability for an expense, payments, which means amounts received, and net, which is what's left over after you net out the designated payments from the costs. Congress gave the Secretary discretion only to determine the allowable costs for the first component of that formula. Congress itself specified the rest of the formula. The secretary must take the allowable costs and then net out two sets of payments, those for Medicaid and those from uninsured patients. The remainder is the hospital's uncompensated costs, which caps the DSH payment. So for Medicaid, for the Medicaid portion of this calculation, Judge Henderson, uncompensated means uncompensated by the Medicaid program.
Right.
So Medicaid costs are uncompensated under the specific formula Congress provided to the extent they exceed Medicaid payments. Nothing in the text permits the secretary to change the formula by adding another category of payment that must be netted out. The complete lack of reference to third-party payments and netting of those payments is not mere silence or a gap that the secretary can fill in. Congress intended the omission. We know for a fact that Congress was aware of third-party payments, since it expressly excluded patients with third-party coverage from the uninsured portion of the calculation. It defines, obviously, uninsured to mean there are no third-party payments. That's the sentence that you were referencing, Judge Henderson.
Sure.
And the sentence that follows, for purposes of the preceding sentence, payments to a hospital for services provided to indigent patients made by a state or unit of local government within the state shall not be considered to be a source of third-party payment. The third-party payment is a reference to the uninsured portion of the calculation only. That's the only portion where third-party coverage is relevant. And contrary to the suggestion made by my colleague on the other side, the indigent patient category is a subset of uninsured. So if you're Medicaid eligible, you are not an indigent patient for purposes of the DSH calculation or otherwise, because you have insurance. Medicaid is a form of insurance. It's only if you're both uninsured and indigent that these state and local programs come in. So it doesn't affect the Medicaid shortfall or the Medicaid calculation of this program. But what Congress, again, just to recap, specifically excludes patients with third-party coverage from the uninsured portion. And with regard to the Medicaid portion, this is what Congress says. It says you have to base the calculation on all patients that are Medicaid eligible. Now, that is very important, and we think the government doesn't give it the justice it requires. Medicaid eligible, all patients that are Medicaid eligible. Congress could have said that it's based on patients that receive Medicaid benefits.
Now,
what's the difference?
Let me just stop you. I read eligible for medical assistance under the state plan. Is that what you're...
Exactly right. That means Medicaid eligible, and it's exactly the same way, Your Honor, that the qualification to become a disproportionate share hospital in the first instance is provided for in subsection B, and it's based on Medicaid eligibility. The government agrees with that. That's actually the textual justification they have at the end of their analysis to include private insurance payments for things that are not even within the allowable cost for Medicaid. So this program works from their perspective only because there's this tremendous mismatch, in their regulation between the costs for serving Medicaid-eligible patients, which are limited to allowable costs, and then the payments that they say they can incorporate into that from third-party insurers, which cover services that aren't covered by Medicaid and at rates far higher than Medicaid, and that is just a grab of private resources to supplement the Medicaid program that Congress clearly did not intend. So let me go back, Your Honors, to this concept of Medicaid eligible. Congress directs that the DSH cap, this limit on the DSH payment, that the limit is set with regard to Medicaid based on all patients that are Medicaid eligible. Congress knows that it could have said receive Medicaid benefits. And the difference between patients that are Medicaid eligible but don't receive Medicaid benefits are specifically patients with third-party coverage, because it's unlawful for a hospital to bill Medicaid if there's a third-party payer. So Congress made a specific and intentional choice to base this calculation on all patients that are Medicaid eligible, even those that have private insurance coverage. And so for the government to come back now and say, well, as part of our discretion to determine costs, we're going to back out those costs and then also payments from insurance, third-party insurance, that far exceed any of those costs and cover things that aren't even related to those costs, because we don't think Congress intended Medicaid-eligible patients with third-party coverage to be part of this calculation. Well, their purpose is at war with the statute. Congress was very clear and intentional in saying the calculation includes Medicaid-eligible patients that have third-party coverage. That's why it's Medicaid-eligible, not receive Medicaid benefits. And Congress had good reasons for doing that. First of all, Congress made the determination that all patients with Medicaid eligibility, and specifically children with serious conditions, which Congress independently made a policy choice about, to provide these very sick children with Medicaid eligibility without regard to their parents' resources or third-party coverage. That's a policy choice that Congress made. And Congress wanted the DSH payment to provide financial support specifically to hospitals that serve a disproportionate share of Medicaid-eligible patients and low-income patients. And in fact, let me take a moment, Your Honors, and just remind you that the main policy point I think the government has, they state it in a couple of ways. Sometimes they refer to it as double counting. Well, there's no double counting with regard to Medicaid. These services were never billed to Medicaid. What happens is they're included in the costs for determining the cap on the DSH payment. And so there are some additional payments that can be received because these hospitals provide these services. But that's exactly what Congress intended. It's not a problem that needs to be fixed. But it's a feature of the program.
If there is third-party coverage or payment from a third party, is there not the possibility of not double dipping, but double receiving in any event?
No, Your Honor. And in fact, let me just remind you that if you look at the definition of DSH hospitals that's provided for in subsection B of the statute, and this is on pages 12 and 13 of the addendum to our brief.
You're telling me what the answer to my question is.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I thought I was.
I couldn't tell it.
Your question had to do with whether
there is third-party payment, and it isn't deductible under the Secretary's netting plan, why isn't there the possibility of double payment for the same cost?
Well, it's not double payment. This is my point, Your Honor, because those expenses are never billed to Medicaid. So Medicaid has never paid for them. There is private insurance that covers those services. But Congress intended, this is my point, Congress intended the DSH program to provide a supplemental payment, not based on specific services that are provided, but based on the identity of the patient population that hospitals serve. And this is why I was referring, Your Honors, to subsection B, which defines the DSH program. There are two ways Congress says you become eligible for this supplemental payment as a hospital, and you're entitled to some additional funds. And one, and this is subsection B1A, and it's on page 13 again of the addendum, says a hospital's Medicaid inpatient utilization rate is at least one standard deviation above the average for that state. And that's Medicaid eligibility. So if you serve a larger portion of Medicaid eligible patients, you're entitled to this payment. B is for hospitals that have a low income utilization rate that's higher, and it's at least 25%. So Congress was obviously focused on hospitals that serve a disproportionate share of just low income patients.
I understand that, but I'm still left with the question, what happens to, I guess you answered it when you're talking about Medicaid eligible as against Medicaid receiving, but a Medicaid eligible patient who has coverage, third party coverage, what happens to the cost attributable to that patient in the calculation?
Okay, so in the first instance, Medicaid is never billed for those costs, so they're not within the Medicaid payment program that's the direct payment for services. But Congress said, in addition to the payments that states have to include for specific services, we have this disproportionate share supplemental payment that's required. And those services are relevant and are important to be included in that calculation. And we know that because, again, Congress based it on Medicaid-eligible patients, which include Medicaid patients that have private insurance. And so
what I'm trying to understand is the dollar figures that are covered by the third party, are they also included in the cost calculation that's under your construction?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are they also included in the cost calculation?
They are.
For purposes of the statute. So isn't that a double payment situation?
It's not. I don't think it's a double payment in ways that that can imply that Medicaid is somehow paying twice.
No, no.
It is the case.
No, the same expense is being paid twice.
No, Your Honor.
Once by the private carrier, third-party payer, and once by this supplemental payment created under this statute.
Right. So I think what I'm resisting, Your Honor, is the notion that this supplemental payment is a payment for specific services. It's a payment. It's a stabilization payment. So I don't think it reimburses those services.
I understand that, but as far as how the calculation works.
That's right. No, absolutely. They're included, and the reason why is because Congress specifically said, base it on all Medicaid-eligible patients. Now, the problem with thinking that fact undermines this program that Congress created is that you have to reconcile that with the way Congress defined dish hospitals, in subsection B. And Congress provided in B1B for low-income hospitals to serve a disproportionate share of low-income patients to receive these supplemental payments. But then apart from that, it says if you serve a disproportionate share of Medicaid-eligible, again, not receipt of benefits, so that includes costs for services that are third-party coverage situations. There's not many of those, by the way. It's a small subset, and we'll get to that in a moment. But that is what Congress intended. Why? Because Congress wants hospitals to run to these patient categories, run towards them instead of run away from them. And Judge Rogers, I think this gets to some of the questions you were asking about hospitals that refuse to provide services or find opportunities to decline services to people that are Medicaid eligible or uninsured or otherwise indigent. And if you look at the legislative history, for example, for these provisions, the 1987 House report, I think, explains how this works. Our hospitals do not turn away those patients, and they have additional restrictions that preclude them from doing so. And Congress recognized that. It said the purpose of these supplemental payments was to assure that the payment rates, that the states have discretion to pay lower than Medicaid costs, that they meet the needs of those facilities, which because they do not discriminate in admission against patients based on source of payment or ability to pay, serve a large number of Medicaid-eligible and uninsured patients who other providers view as financially undesirable. And it's simply not true that our hospitals are in some privileged financial position. They lose money on the Medicaid patients that they serve. They never fully recover their costs. And because Congress intended children's hospitals specifically to be included in this DSH payment system, they serve all comers. They incur tremendous expenses providing state-of-the-art care in NICU units, in cutting-edge research, and in training of future pediatricians that are never fully recovered through the Medicaid program or otherwise. And they are exactly the types of hospitals Congress wanted to receive the supplemental payment. These hospitals are the highest proportion of Medicaid-eligible patients in their states. And as the record shows, they rely very significantly on these DSH payments, and without them, they will be in serious financial trouble, some more than others, to be sure. But they will be faced with the prospect of cutting back services, especially those kinds of services Congress wanted to make sure were sustainable for social services and other kinds of services that are inherent in serving a large portion of Medicaid-eligible patients. Your Honor, I would also just point out that there's a lot of rhetoric about what Congress intended here with regard to the concept of costs incurred, and that somehow cost incurred refers to the entire formula or the end result of the formula. And I think it's important to note that the Secretary's own regulation doesn't treat it that way. In fact, if you look at Addendum 5 of their brief, you will see that the regulation specifically refers to the total annual costs incurred by each hospital for furnishing inpatient hospitals and outpatient hospital services to Medicaid-eligible individuals. They start the same place we do. Gross costs, total costs, and then they back out in a separate part of the analysis, not as part of defining costs, but in subsection 11 of their regulation, they say, you know, take this section that defines all of the Medicaid payments and subtract it from this section that defines costs and allows us to back out private insurance. And then they, once they determine costs in that way, then they, according to this regulation in paragraph 11, then they back out Medicaid payments. So it's not even the case that they treat the payments the same as costs. They only do that for private insurance payments. There's no justification in the statute that gives them authority to do that. And in fact, doing so significantly undermines, in fact, it's inconsistent with the express terms of the statute, with Congress's policies, which were to provide supplemental payments to these hospitals that are in dire need of them, without regard to whether they also receive funds from private insurance.
Can I ask you, since you were on addendum 5, do you read 12, subsection 12 on that page, to be the implementation of the second sentence of G1A?
Yes, Your Honor, and that only deals with the uninsured portion. And with regard, let me just make this point too, if I may, I know I'm out of time. Judge Rogers, you were asking about the practice before the change in position by the government, which they pretend is not a change, which of course is just grounds for concluding it's arbitrary and capricious if you ever get there. If you look at the 1994 guidance that's provided in, you can find it at JA 515, it provides a formula that's very clear, and the only thing that's backed out is Medicaid payments with regard to the Medicaid portion of the DSH calculation. And keep in mind, this is only the cap. The entitlement to the payment comes in another section A, which is not changed. The definition of DSH hospitals comes in B. That's not changed. And the floor that's required, the minimum payment that's required, that hasn't changed. That's still there. That's in subsection C. And then states have discretion between the floor and the ceiling to determine all kinds of factors in deciding how to dole out this money. And what the Secretary has done is it's crashed the ceiling onto the floor with regard to hospitals, like children's hospitals in particular, that serve a disproportionate share of Medicaid-eligible patients in direct conflict with the statute.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Does Ms. Morrissey have any time?
Right,
why don't you take a couple minutes?
Two main points. Judge Santel, you're correct that there are double payments here. Plaintiffs want to count all of the costs of treating these patients and ignore the compensation by third-party insurers. I think counsel suggested that the government's excluding these patients from the calculation entirely, and that's absolutely not correct. The calculation considers all patients who are Medicaid eligible. Both sides agree that the costs of treating these patients should be included. We depart where plaintiffs argue that you should ignore the third-party payments for those patients in a calculation of uncompensated costs. The final rule provides that if you count the costs of these patients, you should also count the compensation that reimburses the hospitals for those patients.
Is the statute doing that, or is the rule doing that? And if it's the rule doing it, isn't the question coming back to, does the statute permit the Secretary to make this?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, Justin?
I'm sorry, that's okay.
Is it the rule doing that, or is it the statute is providing that all Medicaid-eligible patients must be considered? That's
and
set forth.
The statute does not say that you should back out the third-party payments of the sort that we're litigating.
It does not specifically address that. No, it provides that the Secretary has authority to determine the meaning of costs incurred. And as we've said, the Medicaid payments, certainly not the only type of compensation that should be accounted for in a calculation of uncompensated costs.
But it's the only one that Congress accounted for.
It's the only one Congress specifically required to be deducted. And Judge Rogers, if I was unclear at all, let me be perfectly clear that these DSH payments, as I think counsel acknowledged, are all about incentivizing hospitals to treat uninsured patients and Medicaid patients. That's the purpose of the program. And the final rule is attempting to ensure that the limited pool of funds are going to the hospitals that need them most, that actually have uncompensated costs, and that so that hospitals who have uncompensated costs can be assisted in the costs of treating those patients. We ask the court to reverse. Thank you.